I really see the very life of the African country and the human population. Now, if you add to that the number of hours you spend listening to radio, the number of hours spent in reading newspapers and or books, including textbooks, you may understand that we are really other directed, like George Gleason, David Leeson said it would be. Think about that. The number of hours that all of us, our thoughts and activities, are directed or influenced by other people. There are 800 television stations on the air in the United States today. There are more than 6,000 radio stations. There are 1,700 daily newspapers. It is estimated that there are 900,000 people employed in the mass media today. 900,000. Now look, trying to assess all of this is like trying to carry a plate of jello across the Sahara Desert. The minute you leave the starting gate, it's all changed. We're playing 5 games of chess at once, all with octopuses, octopi. There are some phenomena for you to observe. Here are a few. Batman has come and he has gone, except for reruns. The Reader's Digest that said that 12 years ago we will never take advertising takes lots of advertising. You can buy a copy of a Van Gogh or some other prominent painter for $2.79 at any grocery store in your region. Surfing and Golf Digest make a handsome living for their own. The erotic drawings of the masters can be purchased in plain cover. Evergreen Review is openly displayed in the shelves of many libraries. How many know what Evergreen Review is? Two, three, four, five. Some of you have looked at your education. Now I can see a big limit right now. We've got to have the franchise for Evergreen Review. Okay, the Saturday Evening Post has gone out of business. Why? The inroads of television advertising. I mentioned a while ago that great many newspapers have gone out of business. The reason? The broadcast media. Here's an interesting thing that appeared, I guess, about 4 or 5 years ago. You know, they had a newspaper strike in Detroit. Was that about 6 or 7 years ago, I think? It lasted 267 days. They had my newspaper in Detroit. Fortune magazine did an article on it. Here's what they sent it. They said, the daily newspaper may not be an indispensable part of the life of the city. Truth? They said, one function of the paper before the strike was to get their readers from the television set on time. Documentation? During the strike, the newsstand sales of TV Guide jumped from a weekly of 50,000 to 500,000 during the newspaper strike. An indication they perhaps were not getting the information from the daily paper. The two largest audiences for TV and radio in the past decade have been, first, the Miss America pageant, such as the Super Bowl. You can add now Apollo 11 and 13, but even there, you all know what's happening to people that are actually watching the spacecraft. Except moment of crisis. And it goes up again. I've written a little piece called Attention Theory in Broadcasting, which I haven't published yet. Something that people are going to use this media in their search work. The creating of artificial tension is a very important part of it. Okay. The crime rate in this country dropped to two new lows during two television activities. The first was John Glenn's first editor flight. Everybody in this country watched it. The crime rate took a tremendous dip. And the second one was the first appearance of the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. From the sublime to the ridiculous, or maybe you might go the other way around. It's up to you. Now, there is very little question about the fact that the media is increasing throughout the world. For example, UNESCO says that for every 100 persons, there should be 10 copies of a daily newspaper, 2 theater seats, 2 television sets, and 5 radios. Okay? I have a couple of copies of this whole thing here. I'm going to give it to the teachers so you have it, put it in the folder in a few weeks. In 1960 in Africa, there were 1.2 copies of a daily paper, half a theater seat, 1.8 radios, and no television. In 1964, 4 years after that, 10 African states had exceeded the minimum. Today, it has gone almost the proportions of most of Asia, including, of course, Japan. But even with this tremendous, tremendous availability of media, the human animal has some very strange problems. For example, the Knight newspaper chain conducted a poll of 1,700 Americans, randomly selected, and asked them how they feel today about last year's moonwalk, as before the current one. Hundreds of them said they didn't believe it had taken place, that it had been done in a Hollywood set. More evidence? There are 10,000 full-time astrologers in the United States of America, and 175,000 part-time astrologers. 12 years ago, 90 papers in this country, out of the 1,700 we have now, carried columns of horoscope advice. Got that? 90? Today, 1,200 out of the 1,700 newspapers carry the horoscope. Our nation, at least, appears to be looking from almost everything else than the traditional guidance institutions for where to go. They are turned on by drugs, alcohol, the occult, astrology, spiritualism, psychometry, and almost every other aberration of human form. This has been called the age of non-reason. It appears, then, that the people in the church establishment should look at the phenomena of communication from a new perspective, or it may cease to exist for them. It will cease to communicate what it intends and begin to communicate those things which it abhors. Throughout the history of the church, men have spoken in tongues. You know, these are moments of utter spiritual ecstasy that call up unknown demons of delight that result in an unintelligible flow of words. I mean, you ever heard this done or not? I have many times. How many have heard it? We call this speaking in tongues because we don't know what they're saying. Right? The scripture says, what's the target? I know the scripture. Yeah. There are two ways to communicate, to prophesy or to speak in tongues. 1 Corinthians 14, verses 2 and 5. The problem with speaking in tongues, however, is that it narrows your circle of listeners to only those who understand what you are saying. Now, once the church did provide instruction in the language of life, sure. Church is the center of the social life of the community, as well as the center of the spiritual life. I can remember the days as a United Brethren, way back, when the prayer meeting was the social event of midweek. When the Sunday school social provided the mix and the youth for our social intercourse, the men's club and the women's society Christian service were healthy and full and centered on things other than financial. And that's pretty hard to remember that part. But now look at it. In almost every area described here, weakness of some sort has set in. Attendance continues to decline, especially that among the young adults and teenagers. Income to the church, often considered the weather vane of the winds of change, continues to decline on national and local levels. And there is a dismal picture in almost every other way. Yet in the midst of this decline of interest and mounting criticism of the church, it is hard to even hear one word of criticism about He is not under attack. Just the church. What is the church? People who work the finish. The meat. So, it follows, I believe, that they, the outsiders, the detractors, the young adults, and the youth, are finding very little enough as an institution to attract or hold them, or even have an influence on them. But why not, we ask? We're the same as we always have been. We haven't changed. Why have they fallen out of love with us? Well, I think you already answered the question. We are the same as we have always been. And we have not loved as we have been loved. Perhaps it's because our young people, our young adults, are finding Christ in other people, other cultures, other means. The institution of the church speaks of God and Christ in strange, unintelligible ways. We have smothered them with layer upon layer of words. We continue to sing hymns using the language and concepts of an age that disappeared 100 years ago. And we perpetuate a ritual that is the epitome of the status quo, and we still wonder why they are not attracted to it. In the age of the cave? The evidence is growing that we are alone in our universe. You know, it was really a great personal disappointment for me to discover that Mars and Venus and other planets evidently have no more life than the moon. Some of us had hoped that our space probe that have uncovered some evidence of the existence of another civilization, some race or culture that had already crossed the seas of trouble that we were about to embark upon, and have produced answers, or at least guidelines for us to follow, perhaps cutting stone on the side of a curious foot on one of the asteroids. Not there, and I'm going to find it in my lifetime in this galaxy. So it appears we will have to go it alone. And what is the prognosis for that? Not very good, I tell you. World population is growing at the rate of 2.2 people a second. 190,000 a week, that figures out to you. 40 years ago, 1931, the population of the world is growing at the rate of 20 million a year, okay? 20 million. This year, it will increase by 72 million people. So, given the decline in church membership, and a great spectacular thing, the increase in population, the gulf is accelerating. If you figure it out by the percentages, in 12 years, in 1982, there will be fewer church members than there are non-church members. We are becoming increasingly urbanized. Last year, 3/4 of the nation's personal income went to 2/3 of the population that lived and worked in 1/8 of the land area. Population is moving toward the city where the church is least alive. Neil Armstrong looked back from the moon and said, "We are riders on the earth together. We are forced to a new examination of who we are. Compassion, blood of the Lamb, music of the Spirit, salvation, justification can only be defined as a special language and one that is foreign to youth and adults who are not already Christians." Dick Van Dyke, remember Dick Van Dyke? He was quitting, I believe he said in 3 years, he's going into full-time Christian work. He's a Presbyterian, but we're hanging around, you know. But that's when you're going to move $4 million, and you're going to give it up, and big sacrifice. Anyway, here's something he said a couple years ago. I quote him. "Kids of 16 are asking more serious questions about the world than I did at 35. Most young people aren't seeing any relevancy at all in the church. They look around at the double standards of their elders, and they wonder. Somebody has to give them the right answers." End of his quote. The young. The young. Why do you keep talking about the young? Don't the older people count anymore? Not very much, in my opinion. If the older generations have not yet internalized their faith or have an adequate track record of investment of time and money, they are disregarded to get it. These harsh words, yes, I know they are. I intend them to be. But they come out of a concern that the wonderful instrument for the expression of love, the church, is becoming a Berlin Wall of separation. A wall between those who speak in the tongues of traditional Christianity and those who need and demand new directions. One thing is certain, the institution of the church is now constituted will not reap a field white unto harvest. That the grain is going to fall unnoticed to the ground and decay before anyone notices that there is no harvest at all. And we won't die from Armageddon and come down with the sink into the earth and grovel there because we have no spirit. Would you believe that my next 3 words on my manuscript says, "There is hope"? You know, fear or do handsprings or something? The same scripture that says that speaking in tongues is not effective in spreading the good news also says, "He who prophesies, edifies the church." So let's prophesy. We continue to speak in tongues in order to communicate with those who understand the language. Nobody's saying we shouldn't. But let's move on. Let's tear down the wall. Let's rip off the padlocks and the church cupboard dishes. Let's balance our boards of directors and trustees of this and that with young people, one young person for every establishment. Let's encourage the voice of the challenger in church school, if he survives, or in the councils of the godly. Let's stop answering questions that nobody is asking anymore. Let's stop kidding ourselves about our authority to speak for the church. The scripture says, for one who speaks in a tongue speaks not to men, but to God, for nobody else understands him. Now, we've spoken to God long enough. Chances are, he knows what we're trying to say anyway. Let's turn our attention to men and speak to them in their language. Let's throw away the rusty hinges of pride, ease, prejudice, so wide the door to all people. The scripture calls for new language, and so do the media. This church, if we speak in tongues to ourselves, must give way to a church whose primary mission is to give itself away. Now, I'm going to give you lots of evidence for everything I just said. And let's start with this. Listen to this sentence. Keep a chance to move it to you. In the first place, your sense of language was not acquired primarily from books. You began the process of learning language when you were an infant, and the process has continued ever since. Couldn't you make a paper of that right now to sat down and think what I just said? Seriously. Here is how it is done in academic language. Same idea. A primary consideration of rank order of importance should be noted in terms of the student's realization that his linguistic sensory concept is not the resulting mental awareness that proceeds in the main from interpreted specialized communications often designated as books. The student began the implementation of the process of linguistic symbolism acquisition at such a time as he was in the extreme lower age level of childhood, and the same learning process was continued in essentially the unaltered fashion up to and including the negligible schematic change at the present time. I took that from the Bible of Second Magazine. And I roared, my wife said I was something wrong with me. Because this is really our problem in using the media for the church. It's too churchy. I've done study after study on the audience for church programs. And you know what the audience, I've done some for later now, too. I'm their consultant, you know, some of you know that. Do you know what the general audience for the so-called religious programs is? TV doesn't even rate it, meaning that it's below 1%. Would you like to put the dollars that we spend in the total church, not the local church, the total church in America, up against the number of viewers and listeners we have? And put it up against any other use of advertising in the United States of America ever is. I don't have to tell you what it is. And that is the problem. I've just given it to you in this paragraph. The hymn, the long sermon, the preachy voice, the interviews that were done from notes instead of a real interview, and so on. We'll get into that very deeply next week. If I come back after the message. Now, another example. 2 years ago, a family of four left New Orleans on a voyage to Africa. They expected to be at sea for a year and a half, except for brief port calls for fuel and food. The main purpose of their adventure was to escape the influence of spectatorship that television and materialism have on people today, they said. Father, 39 years old, is a publisher. His wife is 33. Their children, Matthew, must be a good Christian family, 12, and their daughter, Melissa, 10. Okay? We're doing this mainly because of the kids, Mr. Heron said as he drank champagne with friends who had come to see them off from the dock of the Southern Yacht Club on Lake Pontchartrain. We see this as pulling them out of the television spectator scene. As we become more materialistic, he said, people participate less, and there is less striving against the environment. You have fewer experiences like fear, hunger, cold, and the feeling of coming through hardship, and knowing you did it on your own. We see our kids growing up without this, and I think that they don't see you as deeply as they could. I want to toughen my kids. I want them to be strong individuals and to cope. Okay. A year and a half they did it. You may recall less than 6 months ago that the Coast Guard reported one night that they had saved a family from boats that was in trouble off the Florida Keys. This is the family. They had the men, they were in the tail line, paid the men to mine. In a television interview that Mr. Herring gave, he said, I thank God we're back in this country. I have been completely bored to death for 6 months and my kids are going through. I want to go back to work and ride the subway. Now, all of us have had this experience one time or another. Sometimes when I'm way down with problems, you know, oh boy, I'm going out to Utah and I'm going to the ranch and met people with cows and, you know, so forth. But I was driven to Utah. It's a little cooler than I would like to. That's another example that I'm talking about. The flashing scenes show a broken, bandaged earth. A young girl going through the frenzies of hallucinatory dread. A house charged with angry parental voices mingled with the plaintive pleas of the child. There's also a young boy seized and assessed by police in a pictorial sequence of cues from an infant booty to teenage sneakers to combat boots beside which that is. Military dog tag with a flame and saber. After each brief film segment lasting no more than a minute, comes the punchline. The world doesn't have a tail without his. He did it. The family prayers, he said. And so on. The sound of love sparks. I'm going to bring quite a few of these next week for you to hear. The language is hip, the music is psychedelic, rock, and Jesus is the man from way out in a new set of youth-oriented materials produced by the voice of prophecy? Seventh-day Adventist Church? The radio spots and accompanying brochures have been receiving wide acclaim for their use of contemporary lifestyles to present the message of the church. Entitled The Way Out, the program aims at young people. Their way outside of music, clothes, and life. We want to hook the youth on Jesus instead of drugs as far as the effect. Growing grass might be greasy, the brochure continues, but are we going to be able to put their trust in it to create our brave new world? Another one says, Jesus knows where it's at. About love and peace and bringing life from each other. He was on a genuine trip about artificial stimulants or religious cover up. Another one says, no matter how many times a brother blows it, Jesus is right in there putting him out of a bum situation. The liberation changes the life, but his revolution is based on love and reason, not on ego power, flower power, violence, or copyright. That's done by the voice of prophecy. I thought they were the people who did this. Old rugged cross, and a 20-minute sermon. And the prayers that go on, and use all these closed language concept I just described to you. Seventh thing is interesting. Where's the prophecy? Amazing. And again, more evidence. The Breston Associates conducted a survey, last year. Question one, do you feel, now this is your opinion, that there is a great deal of sex in advertising, but not nearly the amount of sex in advertising that some people say there is, or doesn't it matter to you? Answer. 57% said there's a great deal of sex in advertising. 21%, no, not nearly the amount, and 19% doesn't matter. Second question. How about offensive sex in advertising? Do you feel there is a great deal of offensive sex in advertising? Not much, or doesn't matter to you? 34% said a great deal. Not much said 44%, or more. Doesn't matter, 19.4%. And now I've come to the country and you know exactly what it's going to be. Question two. If a sexual advertisement is offensive to you, would you refrain from buying the product? Stop your subscription, viewing, or listening, and do nothing. 21% says they don't buy the product anymore. 16% stops with the subscription of viewing or listening. And 55% said they won't do anything. And of course they don't. And it is a myth that you will destroy people's attention and commission by using new methods. Another illustration. And I have to edit this tape sometime or other, but you know, I, as I say, I'm a Methodist, and I work closely with their group, and they brought up a program called Breakthrough. They discovered that their audience was kind of fractionalized. It didn't pay there. It's not the next day. It didn't show anything. Except that there weren't very many of them out there, and TV ran. So I took a look at their series. I discovered that the first thing that came on the screen was the logo of the Methodist Church. You've seen it, it's the cross and so forth. Crossbow, television, radio, maybe on some commission, Methodist Church. We won't break through, so forth. I said, well, we don't even pay me anymore for my consultancy, because we can defend it. That's the problem. I said, what do you mean? You're starting with the church. I said, anything that comes up educational or religious is turned down. We've got the chicken first. So what we did, and it saved the whole series, was take about a 30-second piece out of the middle of the program. You know, these were highly dramatically charged things where they left an open end for their side. Then you talk about it at the panel and you go back and serve it. Take that, right? Jenny is just going to last battle of the room, you know, and she said, you know, I just can't go on. I said, stop there and then say, Breakthrough, presented by the United Methodist Church. Again. Or something like that. A hook. That is not prostituting the product. It is using the product that we have come to know in the mass media. And then they find, oh, you can stay with them in your industry. You've got to hook them. I have made up, someplace, a list of things which I call the new communication. And I have been a teacher, six items that I think should be considered. One is, for the new communication, we must absolutely stop, cease sloganizing. Drop all slogans. Don't do anything the same way more than once in the same sequence when you go back to it. Second thing, the new communication must be receiver-oriented and not sender-oriented. A committee of Lutherans, or Catholics, or Baptists, or whatever, should not be sized up to the bottom of the earth. That's its death smell. The people out there should decide what they're going to pay attention to. Business and industry do it. They test market everything they do, not on the papers, but on the people. And that's the problem. My nomination it is, they have meetings four times a year, and they play the stuff to the preachers on the committee and say, which of us you want to come out? And so you've got to get a sample of 50 people who live out there in that new land and play it for them and say, which of these is anything to you? Receiver-oriented, not sender-oriented. Third thing for the new communication, we must avoid at all costs overt opinion. People in 20th century America do not want to hear overt opinion. You can't go in the front door anymore with the new communication. 14, all communication must be open and not closed. Now, I'm going to have to assume that most of you have had social psychology or had a part of that, by an open and closed communication. It's a little like McLuhan's business of hot and cold. I mean, it approximates that. A hot medium in McLuhan's sense means that the experiencer, the reader, the listener, the viewer, has to do something to fill in some holes. He has to work at it. It's a hot medium. He has to do something himself. A cool medium, it's all there for him. In and out. That's all. Must be open. Well, I don't believe that's what he means, though. Because the second book, you know, he said about his first thing. You know what he said in the second book? He said, I meant nothing at all when I wrote my first book. I was doing a good attention. He did. He said this in his second book. The fifth thing, besides not being open, must be a lot of white space. Now, let me illustrate that. There's not enough white space in there. But it's a closed audience, so it doesn't make a difference. This is just information you want. But if this were going to an unchurched and unstructured audience of any kind, there should be inch and a half margins here. Triple space. In the broadcasting media, it means you should have some silence. Or you should have some good music and don't let Audrey Hoffman talk all the time. I told him that to his face. Prayer should be limited to 40 seconds. Anything that goes on too long and too structured in a new communication is suspect. Why is Lockie in such a tremendous success? Because every 4.5 or 5 seconds it changes gears. If you look at any motion picture or any television program done by a legitimate, successful business, you'll find one thing that at least every 9 seconds your perspective is changed. Or the stopwatch. You'll find it's literally true. Every 9 seconds, it may be focusing on one scene, but the camera has taken another image, another profile. And I would like for you to show me a press service or a clergyman who does not stand behind the pulpit most of the time. Lots of experimenters, not only the Lutherans or anybody else experimenting now, but some of the others are. I went to a Pentecost service last year, and this young clergyman out in Vermont, at a United Church, came time for the sermon, he took off his robe, and said his shirt sleeves, had a lot of lay on, he walked out of the pulpit, down to the front, picked up one of the candles off the altar and said, this is what Pentecost is about. Fire. Flame. Heat. And he walked around, up and down the aisle, saying to people who were there, what does fire mean to you? Get out, you know, or call the fire department, so on. It lasted about 12 minutes, very short, 15 minutes at the most. Came back. This is what Pentecost is about. Same word, fire, flame, heat, and that is the evidence to begin the fire here. That service was alive. Now, I know perfectly well, and that's not silly, because that's the reason I'm not a minister, almost was, but I'll see the reason why in a minute. I know perfectly well that this kind of departure from the tradition is a dangerous thing. I understand that perfectly well. My field is the media and interpersonal communication. And you and I both know perfectly well that if you go into a counseling session with a student and you just go in, you sit down and don't say a word, you've got his interest in you. Because most of us want to say, now let me hear about your problem, son. We assume we know what his problem is. We're answering his questions before he even asks. Same thing is true in the media. We have to pique the interest. We have to use where the guy is at. We have to, as I said in the first part here, not use the traditional expected disposable throwaway concept of religion. And the sixth thing, I almost forgot that, the last thing, is it must be service-oriented. The new communication must be service-oriented. Not oriented to us, but everything we do in the new communication, especially the mass media, must be analyzed with what is this going to be for the guy out there. I'm going to give you a few words, first of all, since you just got down into the sand at the end of the last. And after Ryan makes a few observations, we're going to show you some samples of things that are in the media, both in film for television and on tape for radio. And I brought something today which we'll use as a piece de resistance. The first print of the new Jesus spot, which were available for general use on February 24th. And yesterday afternoon in the mail from my dear friends in New York, I got a print. And it's something to see. So we'll do that later. Well, trying to pick up a little bit on what we tried to do last week, I thought I might enlarge, since I have a captive audience, my views. And what else are you going to do? I can't use somebody else's views. On the media and communications in the 1970s. Now, my first observation is that people who program the media don't really know much about what's going on. And I don't believe they ever will. Oh, we have the demographic surveys and polls. We have Cooper, Nielsen, AIB, Trendex, Pulse, Clarin, and at least 12 other national testing services. We also have hundreds of private ones that are done by media buyers, by companies, and so on. But all of them, you will recognize, function after the fact. Nobody has a crystal ball. They all function after the fact. Now, they measure what is in front of them in display, whether it's a set of diaries, or a synopsis of telephone calls, or a combination of two. But this is not the day of accurate projection. For example, the Mets, remember them? Last one season, first the Mets. The Jets, that nobody said could possibly win the Super Bowl. They did. Agnew's forays into the political wars, which laid an egg. He was totally ineffectual in trying to get people to vote for the candidates he was supporting. And of course, the classic example of the Ed Show. This is not a day of specific and successful forecast. Now let's take a very specific example in St. Louis. About 2 or 3 months ago, the St. Louis chapter of the National Association of Television Arts and Sciences, originally many people, but I'm an active member, had a meeting devoted to what happened in the 1970 television season. What in the world happened? The people that were there for this meeting were station managers, promotion managers, the media critics for the local papers in St. Louis, some Eagle Boy Scouts, a few professors, and mostly working television people. And I think the essence of their discussions might be extremely interesting. Now let me set down for you specific responses to the question of what went wrong. First thing, too many similar programs. Confusion. There's too much available. Duplication had lost its value. You used to call those spin-offs. I'm sure you've had that in the lecture we'll have. Spin-offs. One program on cowboys followed by a dozen programs on cowboys. One doctor followed by all that to work. The concept is not valid. And the reason is, and this is my opinion about their answers, people's value systems change too fast. Much too fast. To predicate today's program on even last year's values. second reason that they gave was the young, the supposed target for the new breed of show, just didn't watch because the lead actors, not the chief, were just too near their own age. They don't want to compete with their own kind, especially when their own kind on television have access to a world the viewer doesn't have. Many people said, those people have instant power. They can shut a door and turn the drama around. They can raise a gun. They can find a new medicine. The world isn't like that. Life isn't like that. So we reject it. We don't want to watch it at all. It's pseudo reality. We don't want it. Third, and this is most telling to us in this seminar, they said that we can't successfully dramatize relevant material. There's too much relevancy available at the realistic level in news and documentaries. After all, these folks have seen the assassination. They've been involved to their eyeballs in life through the tube on the street. They have shared in person the sorrow of the widows and children of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. They know about the kidnapping and death of diplomats. All the plots on television have been right there on their real screen in actuality. Fourth reason, the season bombed. People want to live in a dream world of entertainment, laughter, and sport. They want to be titillated, not challenged or educated. As we always begin, our education shows that way, and often our religious program. They want Flip Wilson and Hee Haw rather than any of the shows that have just been canceled, obviously. They want reruns of Star Trek and Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea rather than the programs that end up in the lower quarter of the rating. Now, the so-called good programs on television, that some people misname cultural, almost invariably end up last in the ratings for any time period. 10 million people saw Richard Chamberlain in Hamlet. There are 220 million people in the United States. They made a choice. And here's what the choice was in St. Louis at the exact time that Hamlet was on. Hee Haw, a movie called The Over the Hill Gang Rides Again, starring Fred Astaire, Walter Brennan, Edgar Buchanan, Andy Devine, Phil Wells, and others. Junior was on at the same time. A rerun of Wagon Train was on at the same time. A pornography program on educational television. And Channel 30 was carrying Curse of the Mummy's Tomb. These are the things that were opposing Hamlet starring Richard Chamberlain. Now, you know without asking why the 10 million that saw Hamlet had chosen any program that had 10 times that number had passed. The general citizen does not know or care about Ophelia or the Melancholy Dame, except that if they watched it, they might be called an effete snob. It would be interesting to have rerun at that time an episode of Richard Chamberlain as he appeared in the Dr. Kildare series at the same time. Would anyone care to wager which portrayal would have attracted the most people? The fifth reason why the season bombed. Pure entertainment programs, Flip Wilson, Carol Burnett, Tim Conway, who also was canceled at have to be very good programs to attract and hold an audience. The audience has become very sophisticated in what they like and achieve. They can't probably express it if you ask them. They don't express it except in the ratings. Well, so much for the season. Jackie Gleason is back, and others of the old favorites have been brought forth from their humidity-controlled vault to be presented again to a critical public. I had a question last time. I don't think I answered it. Now, did I tell you about the NAB survey on radio listening? Last year, that was the last time. Okay. The most popular Catholic program on radio was news. 87% of the people said they listened to news. Second was music. 77% said they listened to music on radio. But it's interesting with music, about 91% of people over 34, okay, almost all, 90% of people over 34 years of age, prefer music over news. The third most popular program was sports, and the fourth was discussions about the news. In fifth place was interviews with well-known personalities, interesting people. And in sixth place, but still ahead of advice and information shows and audience telephone interview programs, come religious programs. About one out of four in the sample said they like to listen to religious programs, not only religious programs. 32% of the women said they liked them, and 19% of the men. The preference rises to 40% among non-white, lowest educational and income groups. According to the study, preference for religious programs increases with age, but on the other hand, in educational achievement and income increases, preference for religious programs decreases. Listeners in communities of less than 50,000 who liked religious programs much more than people who lived in communities of 50,000 or above. Most radio listening takes place in the morning, 57%, less in the afternoon, 44%, and still less in the evening, 30%. So the audience is very well defined for us in radio. Older people with lower income, less education, and if you will, and even if you won't, the group with the least influence in the modern world. Okay. What is the media doing to our society? Well, homogenizing it commercially, dividing it politically, and dulling it socially, I think. What man says he wants or needs is, for the most part, is what the media tells him he wants or needs. In the case of the church, what the established authority tells him he wants or needs. The so-called fundamental church movement in this country is the most guilty of this crime against reason. I think we have become now the other directed society forecast by David Eastman. There is little original thought or expression in our beloved country, at least not in public life. What does the future hold? Not really. Now, let's go, son. If we speak of technology a great deal, the networks are cutting back on their prime time service to their stations. CATV systems, if they have more than 3,500 customers, will have to originate programming, have to, an obligation. The EDR and K-SET systems promise vast new markets for messages of all kinds. The opportunity for more and more programs produced by other than network or non-commercial enterprises appears to be phenomenal, and at first appears to be an ecstasy. Or programming opportunities. But I say to you, as a concerned Christian and a citizen, that unless the process by which we use the media is changed, overhauled, dismantled, or otherwise called into account, the effectiveness of the message will continue to be negligible. Can you imagine a significant number of people, anybody for that matter, going to their cassette store and picking up the Reaper and I, or the Hour of Decision, or any of that type, when in the next draft is their favorite episode of Gunsmoke, or The Guns of Navarone, or Star Trek? No, it will not happen. Perhaps a new enterprise will be coming into our religious bookstores, a section of EVR or cassette cartridges. But if we are serious about the widening gap between those who believe and are participants in our activity, or between those who do not believe and should, then we will have to follow and read the things that are successful in the successful commercial media. Period. We shouldn't follow what our committees of churchmen tell us what we need to do. Our committees should be loaded with professional communicators who are committed to the dream, with a few professional Christians instead of the other way around. The historical reason that education and religious programs have been heard, seen, and read in the most inconspicuous places of the media, and you know what I mean, the ghetto, is that they have not been well done. Not something the station could be proud of. So they put them in the least conspicuous place so they can still tell the FCC why, of course, we put in religious material. But what does a citizen think of communications in the 70s? I don't think he has much of a view. Newspapers are for sports, comics, and shopping coupons. Radio is to give him the weather and time of day in the morning and the news on the way home from the shop. Television to let him slip off his tight shoes of concern of the workaday world and to let him observe the great events of the day as an observer. In the final analysis, he, John Q. Citizen, will take his clues about his life from other people, and about all he can do in the media is to trigger his desire to even look for them. Now, here is the real problem. You ready? WRFM New York rises to third among all AM FM stations in the market. First in the daytime women audience. WDBRFM third in the Philadelphia. KRFM is second in Phoenix. WJIB FM third in Boston. 25% of New York audience listen to FM. That's the reason. Our serious attempt to influence young people who are not church is drowned out by the sound you just heard, and there is no question about that. The problem for people who are studying media in the 20th century who believe in the Great Commission of Jesus Christ is to say, how can we relate all that odd language to people who are listening to this man? And all he was saying was, I am feeling a different feeling. Isn't that also the objective of Christianity? But we crowd it with all these words and layers of theology that we understand, you and I understand it, but it gets down to the guy with the transistor radio in his hand, the car radio, or on the beach, or a mother who's up at 2 o'clock in the morning with a child that's sick. A truck driver driving over a lowly Montana plain. He doesn't want to be preached at or to. He wants to hear about love that exists in the world. And I don't say what that sounds like.
I have to go back to the
And he people were calling in, and so Lloyd asked what they were calling about. He said, everybody wants to know they can get it. But one of the phone calls was on the intercom from the general manager, and sure enough, he said, LG? Almost. He said, you had a choice to make. I want to hear that. I want to hear on the telephone that record being broken. I'll come on over and we'll give you a check right now. So what do you do? He picked up another record and broke it and handed me the one that he's taken off the turntable to lift it out of the station. This record sold out in every turning it was ever made. And this is kind of a collector's item now. It's on tape, and the front end is a little muddy, but if you listen carefully, I think you will get it. Let's hear Green Christmas. That was it. Well, it's a very short record.
Thank you.
I think you understand now why the general manager, this big station, is a little bit upset. And I'd be glad to actually take a paper out of print of it. It really is. I don't think you can find it any place now, but it's something to have in your archives. I think maybe the time may have approached for us to take a look at some other things that we have loaded back there in the cameras and then finish maybe with, okay, Dave, I'm going to have a heart attack going down the stairs. As I was saying, is Mr. Duffy always, oh, there he is, oh, yes, yeah, glad to see you, sir. But we'll take a look at some other things that are running, and then when we get through with them, then let's talk about the value systems involved in this thing. I'm going to take this off in the back and sit down back there. And have a couple of things.
Turn off the, I wonder if it might be the internet. I think I think we We rely on our second language that we understand. And we don't try. We can sufficiently get.